Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Amy Tan has a new novel for the first time in 7 years. Her latest is The Valley of Amazement. Like many of the works by the author of the Joy Luck Club, it deals with China's history and also tense mother-daughter relationships. The novel is a multi-generational story set at the beginning of the last century, which moves between the circumscribed lives of Shanghai courtesans, a remote mountain village in China, and the rough and tumble streets of San Francisco. The novel, again, is The Valley of Amazement, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Amy Tan to The Book Show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me here.
At what point does the fact that you write so much, are influenced so much by your life and by your history, do you know when you are going to explore it through fiction, in the sense of, we'll get to the story of how this book was created in a moment, but do you always know that it's eventually going to wind up in a fictional sense?
I always know it's going to wind up in a fictional sense. All my obsessions, what I'm thinking about, is going to have a narrative. What I don't know is the actual narrative. I have many different narratives I start with, and then some of them fall out, and then some of them I take. The narratives have to contain those questions and be the best way for me to explore them. So usually they have difficulties and draw upon family history, which includes a lot of trauma, tragedy, you know, surprises, discoveries, mysteries, contradictions, and a lot of myth. And those are the places where the best stories are.
So what fascinates me is which comes first. Do you have to work through the history and understand it before it can become the fiction? Or is it the process of writing the fiction that allows you to absorb it and understand it?
It's a bit of both. I have to know something about the setting and the time and how that influenced the story or the history of my own family. And once I get into the story, I have to immerse myself so completely that I definitely need to have a great deal more detail. Sometimes I think I go to an excess level, and I think that's a flaw many a writer commits because of the internet. But I go into further into that world. And I find that there are factors that can alter the story. Once I get into the actual history, it informs me because it informs what happened in my family and hence the story.
And it seems as though, while you may think that sometimes you go too far, then you're reminded, in this case, in this novel, if you hadn't picked up the book and seen one particular photo,
yeah.
You would have not gone down this path.
Right. I had found, through a museum, a book about Shanghai. And as I was looking through, I saw a photo, and it was 10 women, and they were dressed, five of them were dressed identically to what my grandmother's wearing in a photo that has always inspired me, that sits on my desk. And it was very specific, headband forming a V at the forehead, high collar up to the ear, tight jacket and pants with shortened sleeves. That's what my grandmother was wearing, and they were courtesans. And it so defied the myth I'd been told about an old-fashioned, traditional, quiet woman that I was stunned, and I had to go find more, not only about courtesans but about my grandmother, and started interviewing people, academics about courtesans, family members about my grandmother, and came up with some nice contradictions. So again, you know, being able to fall into that.
I'm fascinated by the contradictions, because the contradictions were contradictions.
Yes. And I think what you have is truth within the contradictions, that neither probably are correct, are the whole picture. And so you have one that says, you know, in my grandmother's sense, there was one incident where it was told to me that she was spending the night with a man, and that he came in and he raped her, held a knife to her and said, if you don't become my wife, I'm going to kill you. The other version is he held it to his throat, the knife to his throat, and said, if you don't marry me, I'll kill myself. So somewhere in there, there's a story about intention, about, you know, reason. And I haven't written that story, but it told me a bit of truth about my grandmother. And that is that, one is that she was very desired. She became the fourth wife, but the favorite. There is a story in there. What it also told me is that she was a very strong woman. She had a lot of opinions. People were scared of her if they disagreed with her. And that defied the whole, it defied the story that she was quiet, a stay-at-home woman, you know, a traditional woman. The photo, especially, with her stance looking very provocative and her look of almost disdain in the picture was also one that communicated to me that she was very different. She was strong. She was a real person. And I was very, very excited to know that through the photos.
And one of the things that you know, one of the truths that you know, is that she took her own life.
Yes, yes.
So you almost have to work backwards from there.
Well, backwards from there and also knowing the reason why. Now, the reason why she did that, there were two versions. One is that out of shame, she killed herself after she had this man's first son. The other version is that she killed herself in anger, a way to get revenge because he had promised her a house in Shanghai if she delivered a son, and then he reneged. And she, I found out, also had tried to commit suicide or made a threat of that in the past when she got angry. Whether or not she intended to die is not known. I just find that, you know, we enter these crossroads in our lives, and we see things so differently from our own situation, where we stand, the circumstances before us, the circumstances we, you know, have had in the past, and we have to make decisions. And I think my grandmother and my mother made certain decisions that led to things that upturned their lives and led to their remaking themselves, just as these women in the Valley of Amazement do. You know, they're no longer Americans with privileges. They're no longer a child of an American. They're cast into a world that is Chinese fate and traditions rather than American ingenuity and destiny and, you know, all of that stuff that we think of.
And how it all trickles down of what your grandmother tells your mother influences how your mother teaches you.
My mother's mother said, "Do not be like me. Don't let this happen to you." She hated condescension. My mother did too. She would be furious. I hate the same thing. She hated betrayal. My mother did. I'm sure that her mother did. I hate betrayal with a passion to the point that it's very hard for me to forgive anyone who I feel has betrayed me. My grandmother killed herself over betrayal. My mother was suicidal. Fortunately, I am not. It is not a direct line of inheritance of all the traits, but some of the values, the attitudes, and the beliefs have come down through the line.
So, with that story, you take on this novel about an American woman and a half Chinese daughter and her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
What went into the decision to make that character American?
I wanted an American in part because I am an American, and I need to start off with that sensibility as I go into a world that that I need to rediscover. And so I wanted to create that and have some also a way to foray into the business world of Shanghai, which was so involved with foreign trade and had an influence in our family as well. A very exciting period where everything is evolving, just like these characters. Everything is turning over, spheres of influence. And so it was very important to me to have a character like that who is rebellious and thinks that she will be able to go to a place and satisfy who she thinks she is and find something quite different. also does something during that period that ends up being a betrayal to her daughter. I had to think about betrayal and all of our intentions and things that happened by accident and how culpable we are and the differences between cultures, I think, and how we look at that.
When Violet herself becomes a celebrated courtesan, knowing what you found out about this, how did you want to portray her? Because it could be at the very top, or it could be at the very bottom.
She is briefly at the top, just as all those courtesans were. They're striving for popularity because that is the way that they survive. Mm-hmm. And it really is a look at how temporary our circumstances can be. She is aware that she has about 3 years. And then after that, she's got to make her way and decide for her future, becoming something less than who she is, but in a way that is better than the very bottom.
And just skipping to your own grandmother's story for a moment, you really never know. You'll never know the truth.
No, the real truth. No. And that's good in a way, because then I can spin stories in my mind of what might have been and, you know, use my imagination. And when I do, I can discover more about the history and little details, going to the island where she lived and killed herself, looking at public records, and one day perhaps writing a story that is more close to what actually was her life.
The name of the novel is The Valley of Amazement. Amy Tan is our guest on this week's book show. You were about 100 pages into another novel when...
Oh, 200.
200. You were well
on
your way.
Yeah, I was well on my underway, yeah.
And then this changes everything.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't get that upset the way I used to, the way most writers do when you have to cut things or leave things behind. Mm. I think now that I've written a number of books, I realize that the best part of the writing is the writing itself. It's not the finished product. It's not the pages you look at. It's the actual doing it. Because I discover something as I'm writing. And so later on, when I have to leave something behind, they're still there. That experience is still there. When I was looking at the draft of The Valley of Amazement, when I was done with that first draft, and I had my editor's notes, and I saw the book from a different architecture, an architectural point of view. And then I saw, oh, I can cut this chapter, this chapter, this chapter. I can condense this, take out 52 pages here. And it was, I did some of that in about 5 minutes. Mm. And it was great. It was like unburdening, cleaning out my closet or something. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't think of it as a waste of time, those 5 years. I had to go up to a certain point to learn something. And I did have part of that story, the separation of the mother and daughter in circumstance, and daughter feeling that she wanted to go back and see her mother again in a certain place, but a very different story.
And so there are remnants of that, of those pages.
There is. The remnant actually was some research I did in the poorest, most remote province in China. I went to a Dong minority village high in the mountains, very poor people who make about $70 a year, and lived among them for several times. And there had been a fire and a family banished to the top of the mountain for a few years. And I went to visit them, taking these windy roads that were sort of pathways. And I often felt I was going to fall over and kill myself. But I took that setting, and that was a setting, you know, a fire that happened, somebody banished up in the mountain, mother sends her daughter away. That setting is in The Valley of Amazement. It is, you know, when you think about the real valley, there's a painting that's The Valley of Amazement. But in the book, you see a place they come upon. Finally, there's another change, another arrival. The life is, you know, the life of this woman is going to be altered. And she sees the valley as in mixed feelings. Should she think that she's coming to salvation or entering into disaster. She sees it as beautiful and then as threatening. The place that I lived in, though, was completely beautiful, but it was also marred by tragedy.
In Violet's story in the novel, here is a woman who, given her lineage, is constantly trying to find or understand her origins.
Yes.
And in that, we see much of what you do throughout your work of exploring your origins.
Yeah. I think we all have this curiosity of our origins and how much we've been altered by various influences, including our parents or education or choices we've made, especially those that we later regret. But I'm also interested in knowing how family history that goes back further back than our parents, how much of that is actually still part of us or has become part of us. Mm. It's a kind of, you know, it's not really fate. It's not really destiny. It's more like habits, attitudes, beliefs, and they still can be altered. But you wonder what part of that is intrinsic to us. You know, look at any kind of animal behavior and you wonder what's instinct, what's DNA, what's trained. And it's the same with me. I want to know. And so I tell the stories that I think tell part of it, how especially trauma goes down through the ages and how you can change that.
And it seems as though because we're willing to tell our stories and that people are willing to be more open, not everyone, of course, but that hopefully through future generations there is more openness and we know
I found that to be true with the Joy Luck Club. I had people telling me that they never knew these stories about their parents, which was astounding to me. And then I looked back and that I never asked my parents. I wanted to know nothing about their lives in China for a very long time. I didn't even know there had been a war in China. That's how much I pushed that away. And what I find is that when people read stories, mine and other people's that take them into the past, that they have this curiosity and they realize there is a whole other world of theirs, which is the past. It's the way I feel when I started swimming in the ocean. I looked finally at what was there, what I wanted to ignore that I thought was scary, and I looked and I saw these beautiful fish, and now I have a complete world beneath that water. And that's how I feel about the past. If people realize it's there, it's very accessible.
Scuba diving has become a passion.
Not scuba diving, just snorkeling.
Just snorkeling,
yeah, because I can't really skin dive because I have epilepsy and it kind of wouldn't be good.
No.
But I can do snorkeling. I think this goes along with my instincts as a writer. I want to discover something new all the time. And I don't mean the same way that people talk about jumping out of the airplane and parachuting. I want to discover something almost like a new species. I want to discover something no one has ever seen before, felt before. And so when I go off with scientists into the jungle or, into the water, into very cold water, and these are people who've discovered species. And I want to see how they see the world. And it's how you write as well. You see the world in a larger, different perspective, and it's telescopic and microscopic. So it's a good metaphor for me, going into the ocean and going into the world of the novel.
The epilepsy that you mentioned comes from Lyme disease, which you have suffered with for many years now. And I'm curious as to, does that have an impact on the writing, not only the physical sense, but exactly what you were just describing of how you look at that world?
Yeah. I thought it had a detrimental effect on my writing because for a while I couldn't think. And I couldn't write, and I was afraid I had dementia or something akin to Alzheimer's. But it's, for one thing, it's made me very compassionate toward people who have undiagnosed and chronic illnesses. And also, you know, looking at things that have been thrust upon you without choice and by accident or by whatever it was, a tick that just happened to jump on me. And then I have a different attitude about looking at what health is. Health is being able to do everything I want to do. I can't drive, but I never like to drive. Now, if I did like to drive, then I'd say, well, yeah, this is really cramped my style. But I am healthy by any definition. And I think that's what we do often in life. Not, you know, we look at things, and as we get older or go through other experiences, we say, I have a new definition of what I mean by love, happiness, hope, and all of that. And it could be not necessarily better, you know, a better perspective. But in my case, with my health, it's better perspective.
And with that perspective, does it change the art? Does it have an influence on, on the language, on the process?
It has I think I care more about having the right imagery. You know, when you can't find words when you're ill, and you appreciate how these words contain so much about what you know. You know, you can pick one word that means beauty, and then it's a much more complex thing to find something that is an image that leads to many associations. It's almost like these Venn diagrams where you have associations of things that are that have relationships. And I think that's what you have to do in writing, that creativity in part is finding these associations almost spontaneously. You know, I think the best is when you don't have to contrive them. Some people call them metaphors, but I think they're actual images in the sense that it has a whole, all the senses in it and a particular kind of knowledge of how things work in that image. It's very hard for me to describe. You know, it's like synesthesia in the creative world. And you can link parts of that synesthesia into another one, an experience that has a history to it as well. That's what I think happens, you know, when people, for the longest time, people say, what is creativity? And that's what I think is part of what's going on. And when I was ill, I realized that's what it was. It was hard to get that to happen, you know, to go beyond what was contained when you're ill. And so in books that I write, it's very exciting when I discover those associations.
And with those associations, the language comes quickly, or is it a discovery?
The best is when it happens quickly and when I'm not trying so hard when I'm writing. It's always hard in the beginning when you're trying to get the voice right. Mm. And by voice, I don't mean diction. I don't mean, you know, a kind of accent or anything like that. The voice to me is what I call the guide to the universe that you're creating. The guide has a certain knowledge, and the guide could take you over here to the usual path and say, here are the trees. Maybe the guide knows the names of the different species. Or the guide can take you to this path and say, this tree is called a decapitation tree because this history happened where this person was decapitated. You know, I mean, having a very rich history, a very visceral sense of what happens as they go into the world. And so that is the voice I'm talking about. Which path, which guide is going to take you through the story? And I have to keep knowing, what do I know? What do I want to know as I enter? So I have multiple ones, and I have to decide one for each story.
The novel is gorgeous. Congratulations.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
A beautiful, beautiful novel.
Thank you.
It is The Valley of Amazement, Amy Tan's latest. It is published by Echo. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Amy Tan, a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
Sarah LeDuc produces our show. This was recorded at Argo Studios in New York City. My thanks to their team. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.